sector to add some fermion. So we added some two-component fermions with some weird names. So we said we're going to define a field that's called ECR. This is just part of its name. We could have called it chi. We could have called it something else. It really doesn't matter. It's just to remind us of what its properties are. And this field had the quantum numbers of 1 and plus 1 under SU2 left, U1 hypercharge. We also added a lepton doublet. And the lepton doublet we called capital L, which had a neutrino upstairs and a field that we called EL downstairs. This thing transforms as a 2 minus 1 half under SU2 left U1 hypercharge. All the fields are left-handed spinners. Left-handed spinners under the Lorentz group. And we needed both of these to be left-handed spinners because otherwise we can't make Lorentz invariant objects. So by objects I mean bilinears. I can make more exotic objects, but if I want to put two of these together and contract their indices, they have to have the same kind of indices. So only Lorentz invariant objects from left-handed times left-handed or right-handed times right-handed. But of course, in multiplying them out to create these bilinears, we also have to preserve charge and SU2 cross U1 gauge invariance, and that means that we had to conjugate some stuff. In other words, the C is just to remind us that this object really has the quantum numbers of a positron. But it doesn't matter. You could just think of that as part of its name and not worry about what the symbols mean. I personally think this is the least bad notation. There are other conventions in the literature where instead of having the C and the R, people just call this object E bar, which is really confusing because usually in the same context, the bar is used to denote conjugation of Dirac spinners. And I prefer not to mix conventions. I find that confusing. Maybe other people find that less confusing. I think this way of writing it is much more transparent. Everything is explicitly defined to be a left-handed spinner. All of its indices can contract with all the other indices, at least the spinner indices as they've written out. And then you only worry about conserving charge. So once we define these objects, we found, we worked out their interactions. By which we mean we looked at a kinetic term that had a Hermitian conjugation, a Pauli matrix that acts on spinner indices. So when I act with a Hermitian conjugation operation, that makes a left-handed spinner into a right-handed spinner. And we also had a covariant derivative where we acted with W plus W minus T minus IG over cosine of the weak mixing angle times Z mu times T3 minus Q sine squared theta W minus I E Q acting on, with the photon. And then this acted on the left-handed one. And we expanded this out for ECR. And we found that this gave us I ECR dagger sigma mu d mu ECR. Now I'm suppressing the spinner indices. This is just to remind you where they go. And then we had plus G over cosine theta ECR dagger sigma mu z mu ECR. There was actually a G sine squared theta over cosine theta. That's the weak mixing angle. I just don't like writing the W every time. And there was no coupling to the W because every T acts only on things that are doublets, and ECR is not a doublet. So we also had E, which is just the electric charge, coupling. Let me just say QED coupling. ECR dagger, sigma mu, A mu, E, CR. Okay? And I want to just put this up on the board explicitly for future convenience. For the doublet, so the doublet L contains two left-handed spinners, but this is not a Dirac spinner. This is just an SU2 doublet. What we found was that this object gave us the usual kinetic term I'll write it out in terms of its component parts. Pardon? So there's nu E dagger sigma mu del nu E plus I EL sigma mu d mu EL. There are things that transform as, QED. So there's E left dagger sigma mu A mu E left. There's no corresponding charge acting on the neutrino. It's neutral. There are terms that now do genuinely couple to the W. So nu E dagger, W mu plus. I hope the dagger is distinct from the plus. The dagger is a little longer, but I should have put the matrix in here. So sigma mu W mu plus E left. And just look to conserve charge. So the W is always going to couple two things that are different in sign by one unit. And so E left has charge minus one. It's just got the charge of an electron. And the neutrino is neutral, so I have to put a W plus here. And then there's the conjugated version of this thing with a W minus. So this is going to be EL sigma mu W mu minus and nu E. Okay. And there's going to be G sine squared theta cos theta nu E dagger. For the neutrino, there's a factor of 1/2 here. So nu E dagger sigma mu z mu nu E. So the z only couples things that are of the same kind, at least at tree level. And then there is G sine squared theta over cos theta E left dagger, sigma mu, z mu, E left. Okay. This is a long box. Okay. So this is all in the literature. It's from the previous lecture also. I just want to put it up here for comparison because I'd like to rewrite this in a more convenient way. Just want to make sure that I got the signs right and everything else. No, I screwed up one thing. Okay, this term has an extra piece. So this is G sine squared theta cos theta minus one. Well, crap, and I screwed it up again. g over cos theta minus 1 half plus sine squared theta with no half. And these two terms came from the fact that we had to act with both T3 and with sine squared and the charge operator. There's no corresponding term for the neutrino because the charge just hits it and gives back zero. Okay, so this is everything we did yesterday. And we also coupled these two to the Higgs. So we added a coupling to the Higgs. So the Higgs doublet is charged as a 2, 1/2 under SU2 left. So this is SU2. And this is its EU1 hypercharge. And we found that there was one way to make something that was Lorentz invariant and gauge invariant. And the only option was, so I'll define a number. This is just some number, and I don't care what it is for the time being. It's just the coefficient of this operator, and the operator is H dagger L times ECR. We found that this operator was totally invariant because now the two and the two contract with each other, so I multiply their indices into each other. When I perform a gauge transformation on a doublet, the dagger flips the sign inside the exponential, and then that sign cancels whatever also happens to the other doublet. It just changes e to the I something into e to the I minus something. And the hypercharge assignments for these three fields are chosen to cancel. So this one has, because I've conjugated it, hypercharge of now it's minus 1/2. This one has YL of minus 1/2. And this one has plus 1. So gauge invariance is all built into the theory. And it's Lorentz invariant because all the spinner indices now are contracted with each other. So these are the left-handed spinner indices. And because in Lagrangian we also add the Hermitian conjugates of everything, I should put the brackets around the bigger thing. We also need to add H L dagger, which now has an alpha dot, and ECR dagger, which has an alpha dot. Okay? And then we found that when we expand about the minimum, where the Higgs has a vacuum expectation value, that the leading part of this expansion, the part that scales as the Higgs VEV, is replaced wherever you see an H. V is real and it's neutral. And so what we have is that number, just the coefficient of the operator we've introduced, times V over the square root of 2. And now it's E left ECR plus E left dagger ECR dagger. And this is a Dirac mass. For the electron. So now I can call the electron the way that we usually call electrons, just E minus. And we find that the mass of the electron is just this coefficient. So it's Y electron Higgs VEV over the square root of 2, and it numerically has the value about 0.511 mega electron volts. And I just want to make a quick little aside about the choice of notation. So just aside, and forget this. Forget this if you care. It's not really part of the mainstream of this lecture. I just want to make a comment that suppose we'd chosen slightly different notation. So this came up in the earlier lecture. Suppose we had chosen, say, ER instead of ECR, right? And suppose we'd chosen this to be a right-handed spinner. Suppose we'd done that. We could have done everything in exactly the same way, but then we'd be forced to use mixed conventions. So for example, Now, ER, well, in fact, just to avoid confusion, let me just call it CR. All right, but we're going to think of it as the same kind of thing. It'll play a very similar role. But now CR has a different kind of index. So CR, I don't have to put a C on it. I can just give it whatever charge assignments we need. This now has a dotted index because it's a right-handed spinner. So now I can still make a Dirac mass. But in order to make a Dirac mass, I have to now conjugate this in order to give it the right kind of index. So I have to say, okay, here's the Higgs-Vev, here's y electron root 2, and now we can say E left times alpha C right dagger alpha. So I have to put a dagger here in order to make a right-handed spinner into a left-handed spinner, which is okay. We're not unfamiliar with that kind of thing in other contexts. So we would have E left alpha dot C right no dagger alpha dot. But then what would the kinetic term be? So now the kinetic term now for C so it's C right dagger, which is now a left-handed spinner. So it would contract into sigma mu d mu C right. So so now it's a left-handed spinner, sorry. And now we have to use the other matrix. So then we would say C right alpha dot, and I have to put a, actually, sorry, so this is why this notation sucks. Okay, let me just clarify this. So we made this, this started life as a right-handed spinner, so I don't have to conjugate it. It's already got a dot, which means I can already do this. Crap, but that dot lives downstairs. So alpha dot alpha del mu C right, but then there's a dagger here. And this thing now has an alpha because the dagger makes it into a left-handed spinner. So it would mean that our kinetic term would just look very different. And now the conjugation would live on the right-handed, well, the conjugation would live in the other place. And we'd have to use a different Hermitian conjugation structure for the kinetic term than we did in the scenario where we made everybody left-handed. But otherwise, everything else works out in exactly the same way. But I won't use this notation throughout. I just want to remind you that it's totally consistent and you can do it. So now we've got a Dirac mass, so back to lecture. So now we have a Dirac mass. For the electron. And from here on out, since we'll use Dirac masses, we'll use Dirac spinners, four-component language, which is more familiar and it's easier just for doing calculations. Every time I use a psi, that's going to be a Dirac spinner. So every will be four-component Dirac spinner made out of two vial spinners. And they have to be the same kind. They all have the same charges. So ECR dagger. This has the index alpha downstairs. This has the index alpha dot upstairs. And now this is exactly the same object that you learned in QED. So this is the thing that you would normally use to calculate electrons scattering off of positrons and so on. It's a four-component spinner, and I just want to make contact with that usual way of doing things. So recall that we need gamma mu's make vectors out of spinners, and gamma mu's are sigma mu with alpha alpha dots, sigma bar mu with alpha dot alpha upstairs, and zero, where sigma mu is 2x2 identity and the vector of Pauli matrices, and sigma bar mu is I times minus this. Okay. And the only context in which I'll ever put a bar on anything is that is to help us make Lorentz invariant objects for Dirac spinners. So this is defined to be psi e dagger in the same way that that's a dagger, times gamma zero. And so when I act with a dagger on this object, this is going to give me EL dagger. It's going to make the index a dotted one. It's going to remove the dagger from this and convert the alpha in alpha dot into an alpha. So this is just going to be ECR alpha. And now it's a row instead of a column. Gamma zero, so I'm just going to take the identities out of both of these, put them into these slots. So gamma zero just flips their order. So this is going to be ECR alpha and E left dagger alpha dot. And so now the Dirac mass is, let's say, M electron, psi electron, psi electron. And that is ME, so times this object. So it's ECR alpha. It's E left dagger alpha dot times E left alpha ECR dagger alpha dot, or M electron times, did I screw this up? Yeah, no, it's fine. Okay, good. So it's ECR alpha E left alpha plus E left dagger alpha dot ECR dagger alpha dot. Okay, so that's exactly the same thing that we have on the other board. So every time there's a psi, there'll be a Dirac spinner, and the masses will all look the same way. And so what I'd like to do for most of this lecture is to just rewrite the Feynman rules and all the interactions that are up on that board in terms of Dirac spinners, where it'll be more familiar, and then once you've got it, that's the language we should all use. I just think that if it's introduced in that way, it looks very much ad hoc, because the Feynman rules don't seem to map on anything that's familiar or well-organized, whereas the structure itself is actually very well-organized. Okay, so we have a Dirac spinner for the electron. What about everything else? So for the neutrino, this is a two-component spinner, and it has no right-handed part. So it has no Dirac partner. So I should really just say that it doesn't have a Dirac partner. So EL and ECR are Dirac partners. So this has no Dirac partner. So the mass of the neutrino is zero in this case. Now, we could have given it a Majorana mass, but that would have violated gauge invariance before we expanded about the Higgs minimum, because nu E lived inside of a doublet. So you can't make a mass out of two of them. There's no Dirac partner, but I want to map onto the Dirac language, so I'm just going to define a Dirac spinner anyway, where I'll have a left-handed part and nothing. We'll never use just the Dirac spinner. Every neutrino interaction is going to want to project out only this piece anyway, because we know that that's the only thing that participates in the interactions that are up on the top board. And so for convenience, I'll remind you that There's an object we can write down. So 4x4 identity minus gamma 5, where gamma 5 is I, gamma 0, gamma 1, gamma 2, gamma 3, defined in the same way that the other gamma matrices are defined. And this has the form 1, 0, 0, 0, where this is a 2x2. And so it just has the effect of acting on any Dirac spinner and projecting out the topmost component of that, or the topmost 2x2 part of that. And so PL acting on psi nu e is just going to be psi e. So this one is unaffected. PL acting on psi electron without the nu is just going to be EL and 0. And similarly, there's also a P sub r. So P sub r with the opposite sign in the middle, so plus gamma 5. That'll just do the opposite. It'll just project out the right-handed part. Okay, and so now we're in a position to write down everything in four-component language. So now I want to consider the neutrino, because it's easier to start with. So for the neutrino, we want to be able to reproduce everything that has a nu up in the top board. And I claim that one way to do this is psi nu e. So there's a del mu, gamma mu, psi nu e. So this is just going to be the kinetic term. And the kinetic term only has the left-handed part. And when we expand this out, it's just going to look like the kinetic term in that second box, which I can't see on account of the glare, but I hope you can. Then we're also going to have g square root of 2 psi nu e w mu, so there's going to be gamma mu w mu plus times psi electron, but I have to project out the left-handed part of the electron, so PL times psi electron, and so that has the effect of reproducing the W interaction between the electron and the neutrino. And there's going to be the conjugated version of this, where I put psi electron here, gamma mu W minus mu, PL acting on psi nu e. And of course, it goes without saying that you shouldn't take what I put on the board to be exactly true. I think these are right, but if you should check the literature to make sure I get the signs and the factors of two right and so on. So that covers everything, well, except for the G, for the Z interaction. So what we want to have is G over cosine theta of the mixing angle. So there's psi nu e. Now gamma mu, z mu, question? So T3, P left minus Q sine squared theta psi nu electron. So I'm only considering the neutrinos for now. So just a quick comment about how this works. So it's basically the same thing. I put the PL to remind us that the T3 is only going to be acting on the uppermost component of this. Because remember, T3 only knows about doublets of SU2. And so whenever T3 acts on something, it's only going to return a non-zero value if that thing started life inside of a doublet. In other words, T3 only cares about it only cares about nu left and e left, anything, and it annihilates e right, or ECR, what we're calling that. And putting the PL here makes it automatic. If you don't put the PL here, you just have to remember that it only cares about these and veto any terms that might arise that are ambiguous. But let's see how this term looks. So if I act with G cos theta, so this is going to give me, when I act with the bar, I'm just looking at the Dirac spinner, this is going to give me nu e dagger The gamma mu's are going to look like this. So there's a z mu. Well, I'll put the z mu here for convenience. So I've just multiplied the z into the gamma matrix. Now T3 acting on this, so it's going to be T3 minus Q sine squared theta W, and it's acting on nu E and zero. So the T3 value of the neutrino is plus 1/2 because it lives upstairs in a doublet. So G over cos theta. So when I multiply this whole thing, even when it acts, is only going to give me something that has action in the upper component. And so the upper component is going to contract with this object down here. And it's going to live in the bottom component of a spinner that will then dot itself into this. And so I can just write this out as nu e dagger. So nu e dagger, there's going to be this object, so sigma bar z mu. T3 is going to give me a 1/2. And new electron is just itself. So new electron. So this looks exactly the same as what we have up there. At least I hope it does. Yes. OK, good. OK. Okay, so for the W interactions, I think it should be pretty clear that for the W, you're acting with a left projector onto this Dirac spinner. So that's going to pick out only this piece. And then it's just going to be a simple contraction of the W with a corresponding Pauli matrix. And then the contractions are going to reproduce those. So I think those are fairly trivial, so I'm not going to work any of those out. But now let's look at the electron. So its interactions with the W are already written down, so let's just look at the Z. At Z. So we have G over cosine theta W, psi electron, gamma mu, Z mu. So there's T3 minus Q sine squared theta W. And it's acting on psi electron. Now these are Dirac spinners. So now that's G over theta. This object is ECR not dagger. It'll be E left dagger. All right, just make sure I use the same conventions. I did not. This should be. Right, it should be the other way around. It should be ECR E left. Oh no, okay, so that's actually the same thing as this. Okay, so just ECR E left dagger where I'm leaving off the spinner indices. There's going to be zero, sigma mu, z mu, zero, just dotting the z into this. And so now I should have put the P left here just as a reminder. It should be clear from context, I hope, that T3 is only going to act on the left-handed part of this. So T3 P left, and we'll have nu E, not nu E. This is just the Dirac spinner. So it'll be E left, ECR dagger. Okay. Okay, so multiplying this out, so T3 acting on this is just going to be, so the T3 charge of E left is just minus 1/2, so that's going to be minus 1/2. The Q acting on the upper component is going to be plus, so it'll be plus sine squared theta W acting on EL. Because this thing started life as the bottom part of an SU2 doublet, but we've reorganized it after electroweak symmetry breaking. And T3 annihilates this, and I've put the left projector to make that explicit, so the left projector only cares about what's happening here. So this never feels it, but Q feels everybody. Q acting on this object gives a +1/2 here. Q acting on a conjugated version of something that had charge +1 will also give the same thing. So we have S squared W E C right dagger. Okay. So G cos theta psi electron gamma mu Z mu T3 minus sine squared theta W acting on psi electron gives us G cos theta. It will give us ECR dagger sigma mu Z mu. This term will be proportional to sine squared theta. And then it'll also give us G cos theta -1/2 plus sine squared theta E left dagger sigma mu Z mu E left. Notice that the sigmas that I'm using here have bars on them, whereas the naive expansion of this would have had at least one sigma that doesn't have a bar on it. But I'm using the fact that we can integrate by parts. Integrate by parts inside D4x Lagrangian. So if we can integrate by parts, I'll state and but not prove that if you have two vial spinners and there's some object that looks like this, where this can be any sort of contraction between Lorentz indices, for any two, so chi left-handed vial spinners. So this object can always be rewritten as, oh sorry, there should not be a bar here. So if I just looked at the unbarred version, the dagger has to be on the other side because that's the index structure of sigma, but not sigma bar. This can be rewritten as this one put on the other side times C, contracted into Z mu. Okay. All right, so that's what allowed us to rewrite this object in terms of a sigma bar without loss of generality. Okay, and that maps on to what we have upstairs for the Z interaction. I can't actually see the glare, but if... yes. Okay, good. Yeah, so but we had to combine something from one of those boxes upstairs for ECR and the other thing from the downstairs box, the -1/2 plus sine squared theta acting on the left-handed piece. Okay. Of course, all of this with slightly different notation can be found in Peskin and Schroeder, or Srednicki. These are QFT textbooks. In Peskin and Schroeder, I know it's in chapter 20. That's what most of this course is built around. But also, and this is the references to these things are on the course wiki page, but there's also the two-component spinner review. Quantum field theory, standard model, beyond standard model, all done in two-component spinners, all done in exactly this notation. And this is, pardon? Oh, sorry. Okay, so then this is by Martin, Haber, and Dreiner. And I don't know the archive number, but it was like 2007 or 8 or something like that. But this is pretty comprehensive. It's textbook size. It's free on the archive. Dotted and undotted, yeah. Everything here done exclusively in terms of two-component notation. Okay.
The other question is this thing on the right. You couldn't just get from one to the other by the fact that you're going to be adding the commission conjugate.
Well, but I mean, you also have to, for this one, you could, I agree, but sometimes there'll be a derivative here. And so then you would have to integrate by parts, but it's the same idea. Yeah. Okay. So now we're actually in a position to write down all the Feynman rules. The only thing that I've forgotten or that I haven't mentioned is the QED coupling of E electron, but I hope it should be pretty straightforward to see that that's just going to couple to the photon in the same way for both the left and for the right-handed parts. But as advertised and as promised, everything here cares a whole lot about whether or not you live in the left-handed or in the right-handed part of a Dirac spinner, right? So there are left-handed projectors everywhere. And this was the motivation for starting with two-component spinners in the first place. So some general observations. So this is a theory of electroweak unification. So we've taken a theory that had an explicit gauge symmetry, SU2 left cross U1y, and it's been broken down to U1 electromagnetism, which remains an exact gauge symmetry. And the QED part of this, still vector-like, in the sense that all the couplings between photons, so there's a democratic structure to photon-fermion interactions. The photon likes you just as much if you're left-handed and if you're right-handed. But the W and the Z are very chiral. Very chiral, and in fact, they violate parity. In the sense that if you take x mu into minus x mu, and you perform the same transformation on the higher representation object, you perform this transformation on the spinners themselves, you perform it on the vectors, you'll find that the Lagrangian for the W and for the Z is not equal to, well, under x, is not equal to the Lagrangian under minus x. Okay, and so this got Li and Yang a Nobel Prize. I think this was 1956. Of course, the electroweak unification got Glashow, Weinberg, and Abdus Salam a Nobel Prize in 1979. And so far, we've seen the complete theory of electroweak interactions. If there were only an electron interacting with gauge bosons and a Higgs boson. And the Feynman rules for this can be read off from the Lagrangian. So now we can actually write down some diagrams. So I'll write the most boring one first. So A mu, if I have an electron. This is all in Dirac language, because it's easier to do computations in Dirac four-component spinners. That's the virtue of them. And it's also virtuous because QED was discovered first, and no one really had much need for two-component spinners. They're more fundamental, but you know you needed both of them anyway, and so everything was organized in four-component Dirac spinners until maybe about 20 years later it was realized that you really need to do things in two-component notation. But the favoritism for four-component notation has stuck around, which is why we have to do it this way. So this is going to be minus I e gamma mu, so nothing cares about whether or not you're left-handed or right-handed. But no neutrinos. No neutrinos, and actually I should stay true to my convention, so I should write that this is psi e, so this is just a Dirac spinner. There are now, and this is the only interaction with the photon. And that's it, and we've already seen this. This is referring to the box, not to the fact that it's not a neutrino. But there are also interactions with the Z and the electron. So writing it in four-component notation with the right projectors means that I don't have to tell you whether or not this is the left-handed or the right-handed or anything. Even though the Z cares a whole lot about this, I can now just say that this Feynman rule is IG over cosine theta times T3 P left minus Q sine squared theta, and then the Q is just going to be the electron's charge. But I'll write it in this way because this is going to be generic to all fermions that couple to the Z. It's true for neutrinos as well. Only for neutrinos, Q also annihilates you. So I should just write down that this is true for neutrinos as well. But it doesn't change an electron into a neutrino the way that a W would. But I also forgot, and you should have screamed at me, that there's a gamma mu here. Okay, so it couples like a photon after you've projected out some of this other stuff. And the Z is the only thing that couples to two neutrinos. Only boson to couple two neutrinos. Okay. For the W, we have psi electron, psi neutrino. So it's always going to be one and the other. And make sure the charge is conserved at every vertex. So that'll tell you whether to use a plus or a minus. But the Feynman rule is always going to be 1 over g root 2 gamma mu p left. Okay. And the only other one that we've seen is the Higgs. But I'll write it as little h. So for the Higgs, this is E left ECR and a Higgs boson, and the coupling is I Y electron over the square root of 2. When I replace the Higgs with its mass, so if I want to talk about the Higgs interaction, once we've written it in four-component language, the four-component language lets us write down so in four-component language, we can write this as psi electron times a Higgs, and this is going to be I times M electron over the VeV of the Higgs. This is exactly the same thing as this. I just want to write it this way because it's conventional. And that's the whole story. So I'll leave it as an exercise to you to review gauge self interactions. So not a formal homework problem, but these are the only interactions that I haven't written down, and they're going to look like, say, two W's and two Z's. There are Feynman rules associated with these. There are two W's and two photons. Sometimes the photon will be a gamma, but I'll try to stick to the A convention. And then there's going to be WW, Z gamma, and of course, WW, Z or gamma, or Z or A. Okay. So these are also in chapter 20 of Peskin and Schroeder. Okay, so with the remaining time, so now the whole structure is up on the board. Are there any questions about this before we add more stuff? No? Okay. So that's everything in two-component and in four-component notation, where you only have one doublet that interchanges an electron and a neutrino, and one singlet that becomes the Dirac partner of the electron. So now, but there are more leptons in nature. What about the other ones? So we know that there's also a muon. Unfortunately, the mu is the name, but we use mu's as Lorentz indices, so I hope it'll be clear. There's also a tau. And they're corresponding neutrinos. So there's a new mu and a new tau. And those are going to have exactly the same structure as everything else. So all identical, except Higgs, except the Higgs interaction. But everything else is literally identical, can be read off from all the other boards with the replacements. ECR goes into mu CR, so we're just going to define a field that like mu CR that has the same quantum numbers, same representation. Under SU2 come across U1, or tau C, right? So these are all still left-handed spinners, there are just more of them. And we're going to have multiple lepton doublets. So L E goes to L mu, which is nu E. Ah, crap. I just did it the wrong way. Mu left. So these are just the names of these things. This should not be confused as a Lorentz index. This is just for the name of the particle. Or L tau, nu tau, and tau left. Okay, but they're still 2 comma minus 1/2 under the gauge group of the standard model. So instead of writing down SU2 cross U left, I should just say that G standard model is this thing. Save me a little trouble. Okay, so now these doublets can couple to the Higgs. And it's basically the same idea. So we would have started life in two-component language. So in two-component language, I could have said, all right, so here's y mu over square root 2. Well, there's no square root 2 just yet. So y mu times L mu c, right, plus the Hermitian conjugate. And this will give a mass to the muon, so expand about minimum. So this is going to give us y mu times the Higgs vacuum expectation value, square root of 2, times the left-handed part of the muon, times the mu CR, plus the Hermitian conjugate of these things with the daggers on them. And we identify this as the mass of the muon, and that's roughly 106 mega electron volts. Okay. Okay, and same for tau. Why are there three copies? Nobody knows. It's just life. So the mass of the tau is y tau v over square root 2. So the v is the same for everybody. That just comes from expanding about the Higgs minimum. The y's are different. So the y's, each y sub l is a Yukawa coupling. And it differs. Maybe I shouldn't get rid of the Feynman rules. But note, since mu E have the same quantum numbers, the same representations under under G standard model, there's really no reason to put them together diagonally. We could have mixed them up a little bit. We could have said, okay, so let Y ij be a 3x3 matrix. And we could have said, all right, let's write down the interaction with the Higgs in the most general possible way. So there's just going to be some yij. There's going to be some h dagger. And then li, I'll say lcr, j, where these are the generation indices. So one, say, is the electron, two is the muon, and three is the tau. We could have done this. We can't do it for the neutrino because there's no right-handed analog. There's no singlet neutrino. And then we could have expanded around the minimum and had off-diagonal terms. Of course, for leptons, we have the luxury. So for leptons, if the mass of the neutrino is a zero, which it is in this case, true in standard model, not in nature. So the one part of the standard model that we now know is wrong, but it's an easy fix. So for leptons, we can just diagonalize this with no other consequence. So we can say take Li into, well, this is a flavor index. So flavor and generation are used interchangeably. I keep breaking track. So we can diagonalize this with some sort of unitary transformation, Lj, and we can choose Lcr to go, say, to Vij, also another unitary transformation, times Lc sub r, j, and that has the effect of taking yij, h dagger, li, lcrj into y diagonal, ii, li, lcri. So this is just going to be y electron, y muon, and I'll write it in the most obnoxious way possible. Okay. And then we can forget about it because we've diagonalized it. And the important thing, which we will not see in the example of quarks, which we'll get to next time, but we diagonalized this and U and V disappear from the theory. They disappear from the theory. Is that obvious? Well, if I diagonalize, if I perform this unitary transformation on the lepton doublet and on the right-handed lepton, or LCR, what's going to happen in our kinetic terms? So up there in the kinetic terms, all the ones that are diagonal in the sense that there's something acting on its dagger, that's automatically just going to become one because these are unitary matrices. So same matrix times its conjugate is going to give back the identity matrix, so those are fine. The only one we might have to worry about is one that involves the electron and the neutrino. So for example, so let's say we worry about a new electron, dagger W mu E left. When we perform this transformation, one thing I was sloppy about, it doesn't make a big difference, but what we really should have done is, say, expanded this about the minimum, where we're really looking at y ij times 1 over square root of 2 times the Higgs Vev times E left I ECRJ, where The indices should just remind us that these could be any one of these things, even though I'm using E. So the notation kind of sucks, but you only have to go through this once. So really the diagonalization should have been on the E left instead of the total doublet. So, sorry. E left. Okay, so just the two different parts of the electron Dirac spinner get the unitary transformations. And those unitary transformations will show up in other places. This is the only one that's problematic, that's not obviously a matrix multiplied into its own inverse. Where here we might get, say, flavor index I and a flavor index J, because there are three kinds of neutrinos. So we would have gotten U. Well, we would have gotten nu electron I sigma mu W mu U acting on E sub L, so IJ times J. And then this is not diagonal in the sense that the same kind of neutrino is not interacting with the same kind of electron. We now know this isn't a problem because neutrinos oscillate, but in the canonical standard model, what you would have said prior to the discovery of neutrino masses is, I don't actually care about this because I can always just perform some U neutrino transformation on all of my new E's, and in such a way that compensates for this. So I could have just defined this such that U neutrino times U is the identity matrix. And, well, that would have been a dagger. And so that would totally remove the off-diagonal terms from the theory, and we would just define the electron neutrino as the one that couples to the left-handed electron. But now that things are a little more complicated because neutrinos are discovered to have masses, but I won't get into that. So that's a good place to stop. So tomorrow is going to be a double lecture. Joy, joy. And it's going to be, well, it's tomorrow and it's on Friday. And so just as a little prep, So tomorrow we're going to do quarks. So we have the machinery to talk about everything in the electroweak sector. The quark story is going to look very similar. So quarks and the W, Z, and the Higgs. So how do the quarks get their masses? How do the quarks interact with the W and the Z and the Higgs? And after everything's up on the board here, it should be straightforward to write down what these things are once we've introduced them in a language that's compatible with SU2 cross U1. The only thing that's non-trivial about this will be flavor. Because now, the analog of what we just saw for the case of leptons, where you can just diagonalize away all the interactions with the W, we were able to do this because we said we don't care about neutrinos because they're massless, and so they're going to be defined by whichever linear combination we stick into this operator. For quarks, that's not going to be true because everything's going to have a mass, and so that means that the W is actually going to change flavors of things that interact with it, but we'll get to that tomorrow, and I'll review this last bit before we dive into that. So are there questions? Okay. Oh, and on Friday, I guess assuming that I'll get done with all of this, then on Friday we should talk about the beta function of QED. So we'll talk about the standard model at one loop for the first time.